The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Good morning and welcome to Guardian Radio AM. Today is Friday,
April 21st, and it's a little after 11 o'clock in the morning. Once again, this is C.A. Nuri, and I shall be your host today as we talk about what is it to be Bahamian. And people say, man, what are you talking about? Bahamian is just being. It is what it is. I is Bahamian because I is Bahamian. I born here. I from here. Right? But there is a concept, a term, that I heard about 4 or 5 years ago that I want to investigate and find out why we such peculiar people. Why we act like how we act when we supposed to be Bahamian. So people may say, well, so what word is that? And that term is ontologically American, ontologically white, right? And you might say, what the hell is ontological? And I say, well, it ain't my word to explain, right? It's a word that I came across while I was blogging about 7, 8 years. And when one Erin Green, that's why I invite her today, Erin's going to join me today, and she used this big word, ontological. Ontologically white, she used. And I said, she explained to me, and I said, so it's possible for one to be ontologically American. And she goes in detail and saying where she got the word from and how the word is used and the context and the syntax and whatever it is. And I said, no. I'm going to hold this off for a show on Friday. Today is Friday. So this is what the show is going to be about. Where she got that word from, where it originate, and of course, why we as Bahamians are not doing we true, being our we true self, but being ontologically American. Why we so American? But without further ado, let me bring on Erin to explain what ontological means, mm-hmm. and then explain where she get the concept, the term, the mixing the term ontological white and ontological American.
All right. Morning, sir. How you do?
I'm always good, man.
I had to ask you the question, can you see the plantation through the palm trees, right?
Yes.
And then I realized that I want to suggest a few reasons why people possibly can't see the plantation through the palm trees.
Go ahead.
But this gets a little heavy. So let's start here, right? It's mm-hmm. like always a disclaimer I start with. I want to say there's a difference between race and ancestry, right? And I always find it's more helpful to talk about ancestry than race. Because race is mutable. That means it changes over time, geography, and culture. Right? Like what it meant to be white in the Bahamas 200 years ago is different from what it means to be white in the Bahamas today.
I understand.
Right?
It seemed as being Irish was maybe not white or lesser white, or being Italian was not white at all, but now it's white.
Yeah.
Right?
Or
being Greek was not white at all, but now it's white.
Yeah, just like that, right? Like race is a construct, and it was created by a small group of European people to privilege themselves over everybody, including other European people, where white is good, and mm-hmm. everything else is black, right? Mm-hmm. And then as we evolve, we get to a place called colorism, where there's like stages of proximity to whiteness, mm-hmm. right? But let's start there. Race is a construct. It's mutable. It changes over time. Ancestry is immutable. It does not change. Your DNA doesn't change. Your lineage, it is static. It is what it is. Mm-hmm. But race can change, right? I always want to start there because people tend to become uncomfortable.
Yes.
Like when you talk about whiteness, but when you understand that whiteness is a construct and ancestry is real, right? So some people, they identify as white. Some people I know insist on not identifying as white, but identifying as European descent. And I always find that talking about ancestry is more helpful than talking about race. Now, there's some instances where race is the only applicable term, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's get...
I find a number of persons tend to get defensive when you
talk about race in general, right? In general.
Yeah.
Especially when you use the word white, people say, oh, are you being aggressive? Are you being, what you're trying to get at?
Yeah.
Right? Or even when you use the word African, so why are you calling me African?
Yeah.
And whereas I am Bahamian, right? Mm-hmm. But yeah, I want you to go with this. Go ahead.
Okay, so I first heard the term ontological whiteness being used by Helen Klinaris, and she was referencing a conversation she had with Dr. Keith Russell. That is Dr. Keith A. Russell, right? A conversation.
Keith Russell is a historian. Helen Klinaris is a writer.
A writer, advocate.
Yes. Okay.
Okay, so ontological whiteness is an amnesic state, right? It's like you have amnesia, where you are so consumed by white language, white culture, white systems, that you forget that you are not white.
You know, you have to explain that, because just now he's talking about ethnic groupings and origin, yeah. And then you go on to say white is something to construct, and now you're saying that you're so caught up in being white. I don't understand.
No, okay, so ontological whiteness is a state where you forget that you are not white. So you find that, like, some Bahamians will leave here and go and live abroad, right? And the first time they ever experience racism is abroad. Mm-hmm. And they'll tell you, I didn't realize I was black until
yes.
I had this encounter or this experience with somebody that they pointed out that I was black. And it's like, you're so consumed, like a person like me, I went to QC, mm-hmm. you hear in my speech, for a moment there I was consumed by whiteness, but there's a balance of things in my life, like Audrey DeVoe scooped me up and take me to a Methodist youth summer camp from I was 5 till 18, connection with Family Island people, Anglican Church Vacation Bible School, right? It helped a balance for me, living in spaces where I could be easily consumed by white language. You know, you go to QC and you have to speak proper all the time.
Let's backtrack.
Yeah.
And give, again, a definition of what, in this conversation, what whiteness is.
So, like, whiteness is like, it's like culture.
So it's culture.
Yeah.
Not a complexion or a race, but it's culture.
See, it's a construct, and it changes. So we started off by saying, oh, your skin is white. Look at you. You're white. Mm-hmm. But it's more than just that, right? Because you find that black people, the people who are African, tend to take on some of these things so that they can advance themselves. So we speak in a certain way. And then we denounce the way that other people speak. Like, why are you speaking like that? Why is she using that language?
So the need to be standard,
you perceive white as the correct standard. So mm-hmm. the need to be standard, right? But more importantly, let me use another example.
Okay.
Earlier in the sports show, we started mm-hmm. talking about ontological Americanness, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we forget that we're not American. A perfect example, you'll hear people say, the police read you your rights. They have to read you your rights, you know.
So read a Miranda rights.
Right, Miranda rights. That's an American concept. That doesn't exist in Bahamian laws. You don't have Miranda rights in Bahamian law, but because we watched Law and Order for 30 years straight, almost 40 years straight, right? 30 years straight, we forget that we're not American. Those legal, that legal culture, those things don't apply in the Bahamas. Another example, mm-hmm. Eric Sawyer III says that the Bahamas should begin a sports program where we farm guards, basketball guards, right? That's the basically like the shortest people on the team, mm-hmm. because we think that we are producing NBA players. So Eric is 6'3", mm-hmm. and when he goes on the court in the Bahamas, everybody wants him to play center or power forward.
They consider him a giant.
But in the U.S., in the NBA, he's only as tall as Steph Curry. Mm. He can't be more than a guard. We think that we are American, when really, we ain't American, but we're so close to America, we're so consumed by American culture and language and music, that we forget that we're not American. Right? In the same way, we forget that we're not white.
I can understand and appreciate the ontologically American
part.
That's easy, right? Ontologically white, I'm getting there.
Yeah.
But ontologically American, I can remember on TV, they challenged the police.
Yeah.
And my father said, man, you don't challenge Bahamian police like that or you may get slapped down. And I said, no, man, I have rights. I can put the camera phone in front of the police officer, surely, and tell him about himself, his dirty self, and to call him names and use foul language. And they said, here in the Bahamas, you get locked up. And I said, no, man, on TV, they don't get locked up. This is what they do.
You could have the camera, but don't talk to him bad. Don't talk to him so hard that he's in fear of his life. Because you know your parents has talked to you so hard, you could be in fear of your life.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do that with the police.
In the United States, they're the police.
Yeah.
So surely, me being so close to the United States, I can challenge and dare the police too. I can record and put things on social media and say a freedom of speech, freedom of protest. I have a right to be here, right?
It's not quite the same. And that's the important part. It just is not the same. And we just assume.
Because I'm not American.
Because you're not American.
Let me speak to the people online. Go ahead, caller. Thank you for holding.
My call, I have something for Erin to ponder so I can understand her right. You're saying that one is mutable and one is fixed, meaning your race is mutable and your ancestry is fixed. Did you say that?
Yes. So.
Okay, good. Right, no, I just want to say that so I can build to my question now.
Well, can I give you a personal example?
Well, after this question, may I just finish so I don't forget what I want to ask you?
Sure.
And then I have to call back and then you won't let me. I want to find out now, aren't we all a part of the human race, which is fixed?
That's ancestry.
You're not a part of the cat race, the
dog
race.
No, but that's DNA, that's ancestry.
Human?
DNA,
okay, so I got you. So all humans are part of, are connected to DNA.
Yeah.
And animals are not, they don't have DNA.
The animals are connected to each other through DNA.
And they're not a part of the race, too.
Well, I mean, they're not humans. They don't have human DNA.
Yeah, but you see, you only want to talk about races being human. There are other races.
No, there are other species of animals on the planet.
Other species, I see. There are other species, but they're not race.
No, race, what we're talking
only
about...
Only human.
What we're talking about is a particular construct called race that was created by a small group of Europeans to privilege themselves over other people.
It was created for us.
Right, but we're not talking about species. We're talking about race, yeah.
I understand you clearly now. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. The example I was going to give is that when I go to England, like I went to Belgium.
Go ahead.
I was black.
He's black
in the Bahamas, in certain places, in Johnson Road, in the Eastern community I grew up in, people say, oh, you're a little bougie, you're a little white. When I went to Africa, to Zambia, the boy referred to me as like a little, he could see I was brown, he could see I was his cousin, but I was one of his lighter skin cousins, and he referenced white a little bit, a couple times in the conversation, you know, and he's making a distinction. In the Bahamas, in some places in the Bahamas where I could be perceived as whitish, white. This is not just that I'm light-skinned, right? Mm-hmm. It's that I speak in a certain manner.
Yes.
And then I don't just throw things on the ground, right? Mm-hmm. Like
And people say, man, you think you white.
Ah, there you go.
So you ontologically white.
Right, there you go.
Like I have West Indian cousins, as you know.
Yeah.
Who called me American. And I said, but y'all know I'm Caribbean.
Yeah.
You know I'm from the Bahamas. Why would you call me American when they say, but you act and you sound, your culture is American. You are American.
Another example.
You don't be like us.
I went to Cuba.
Uh-huh.
Conference. Conference is at a hotel, but I stay in an Airbnb in a community. So you could either buy your internet card, like your phone card, but to connect to the internet in the hotel or in a community, like a community kiosk. It costs 4 to 5 times as much to buy it in the hotel than in the kiosk, right? So I say, well, I can save my money, and I can stand online on this kiosk. And I stand in online, right? And I realize that people are jumping the line, but they know each other. And there's no fussing or fighting. This is a system they have. And I just observe it, right? And they jump in the line. And then after 20 minutes of watching people jump the line in front of me, and I know there's a limit on the cards, I say to, like, right? Like, just to make it known that I'm aware something happening, right?
Mm-hmm.
The woman in front of me, she looked at me, and she said, where are you from?
Mm-hmm.
Like, she said, where are you from? And I spoke, and she looked, she said, Bahamas, right away.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because I looked like I could be Cuban, but as soon as I started talking, and the way that I dressed, so I may have been a Cuban visiting Cuba, but they knew I wasn't no Cuban.
No.
And as soon as she heard the accent, she said, oh, you're my cousin from the Bahamas. Mm-hmm. And then she knew exactly right. But I was more American than I was Cuban, which meant I must be Bahamian.
Yes.
Like, she figured all of that out in those 3 seconds.
Call, you can call back. The numbers are 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. And of course, if you call in the Family Islands, it's 300-5720. And to join the conversation, I see the caller call back. Producer patched the caller through. Go ahead, caller. Can you hear me? Caller Grinwent.
Hello.
Go ahead, Sparky.
Good morning, Mr. Nuri. How you doing? Good morning, Ms. Green.
Morning.
Yeah, okay. Coming up around here, a little bit older than a couple of years, a few later chair of them. When I was growing up, and when we was learning things in the Bible, I never saw the word black and white. I heard everybody was referred to by the nationality, the Egyptians, the Israelites, the Hebrews, and this and that. They never thought about black and white. When it came to America, they referred to the American Indians as red Indians. When it came to the Chinese, they used to refer to them as yellow Chinese yellow. But the only thing I hear them stand up, most other peoples are referred to by their countries, not their color. Mexicans are called Mexican. People from Peru are called Peruvians, Brazilians, Filipinos, and stuff. They don't call no color. The only color they is called is black and white. According to the white man, they're the people that started this thing. Everybody else was a color, but they're the only people that laid with the white pig. Everything else is a color other than them. They are white. They are royal. There's this and that. That's like they run the world. And all of us growing up noticed everything we saw growing up in church, in the Catholic Church, in the Anglican Church, was white Jesus, white God, white angels, white wings, and blonde hair, and gold, and long white dress. Everything was white. Anything was black was bad luck.
Okay, Sparky, let's reply to that, and I appreciate that. And I have a text here, let me read that. Say, did you see the outrage in Egypt that Cleopatra is portrayed as black in the Netflix series? Talk about surprise. I thought Egyptians were black, but no, they say they light-skinned. Who knew people had this in their brains?
Well, listen, I mean, if you were paying attention, you would sort of figure it out. I think there's been like a whitification of the world, you know? I think psychologically, we whitified the world, and physically. Northern Africa and what we call the Middle East. The Middle East is Africa.
Yes, the Middle East.
The Middle East is Africa,
mm-hmm.
Right? But we've allowed this perception of race to because we have been convinced that Arabic people aren't Africans, right? That's been that's allowed us to hold what they call the Middle East, like in stasis, like in a vacuum, mm-hmm. above Africa. That's Africa. Now, I could imagine that the movement of people back and forth between Europe and Northern Africa, right, over thousands of years, hundreds of years, conflicts in Europe drove European people south, right? And then the conflict drives them back north, and then conflict drives them back south. There's been a whitification of that space. But who in God's green earth thinks that Cleopatra was white like Angela Lansbury?
She can't be that white. I mean, she can have some, maybe a tinge.
No, who thinks Cleopatra was Kim Kardashian complexion? Hmm. These people were black.
But they say she's of Greek extract, so she's Greek extract. Remember, again, they say Greek was of color. Just recently turned. Anyway, at a different.
But thing. This is the same thing. We may not want to delve into it right now because we acknowledge, right, that people get very uncomfortable when we're talking about these things. But here's the point.
And I see the text is saying, remind me that they thought her of Greek descendants, but I'm reminding them that Greek just turned white.
But yeah.
They were considered black also.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. But I want to read this to say it's called Oreo. Black on the other side, white on the inside, something like that.
Well, listen, so Oreo is, that's our parlance, mm-hmm. Mr. Nuri. That's a slur we used to use. That boy, Pharrell Williams from the Neptunes, he has this song, this line, he says, his parents say, how we both black, but our kid is biracial, right? It's when your skin is black, but your culture is like white. In the Caribbean, you know what they call it?
Mm-hmm.
Roast bread fruit.
Ah.
You're black on the outside. Yeah.
I see I have a caller here, but I want to read this first, right?
Uh-huh.
It says, race and ancestry is the same, But God created races, not man. Man created perception of races. All black man is African. But all people were African, eh? Because all the human being concept came out of Africa. So everyone had, was one race, I assume, at one point in time. And then through years, it's changed.
Yeah.
But let's go to the caller. Caller, can you hear me? Call a girl once. Call a girl twice. No, you're not there. United States export their culture. They export how the world view color, mm-hmm. views color. They export the Americanism to say, well, this is the culture of America and this is how we see the world.
They
export democracy.
They attempt to control how we perceive the entire world, and race is one of those constructs that they use, right? But it's called cultural imperialism. I would suggest that in the imperialist toolkit, there are three major planks.
Okay, but go back to the caller and agree. This text, as we get you caller, say Cleopatra was white. She was from the Ptolemy white dynasty. She was from the original people. White people ruled Egypt after Alexander the Greek. But again,
Alexander the Great wasn't white neither. Come on, man, people.
But then again, I'm saying that Greeks just recently turned white. Before they weren't, they were people that were considered people of color.
Right, but not just that, right?
Maybe brown skin. No, maybe not.
Let's go to the call.
Let's go to the call. Caller.
Oh, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Oh, I'm just calling. I know it's slightly off topic, but in recognition of like World Health, World Earth Day rather, wanted to speak to Dr. Erin Green about just the initiative we're doing. Mapping the Bahamas.
Is this Ms. Bullard?
This is Dr. Ogunipe.
Oh, wow. Good morning. Go on. We know that World Earth Day is tomorrow, Saturday, the 22nd of April, and The Guardian has been alit with news about it. Please share quickly, if you don't mind.
Yes.
Yeah.
My company, Global Geointelligence Solutions, along with the University of Nottingham and an NGO called Rescue Global, we're working on a project in the Bahamas looking at how natural disasters like hurricanes compound with social issues and sort of exacerbate the situation even more.
Okay.
And so we're using geospatial data from satellites and from other data sources and using that to map the Bahamas and to look at the impact that Hurricane Dorian had on the different islands, and also to look at and identify the different vulnerabilities for the future so that we can create applications. So today and tomorrow we're having a little what's called hackathon where people registered from around the Caribbean and around the world to come up with different ideas and actually come together and do the coding for the ideas of apps that can be useful for mapping and planning with respect to disasters and respect to geospatial data for that. Okay. So I guess we just want to encourage some local Bahamian participation in the hackathon.
So tell us, how do we get on board? How do we engage the hackathon and participate?
We're having it, the people can come along to the UB Open campus, and we're having the event there.
All right, and what time and when?
Well, it's already started today, but
people
can enter as well, or they can just, if you type in on Google, Foresight DRM, Disaster Mapping Hackathon, Google will bring up the registration page.
Can you repeat that, please, slowly? Foresight?
Foresight.
Foresight. Yes.
Then space DRM for Disaster Risk Mapping.
Uh-huh.
And then just Disaster Mapping Hackathon.
Okay. Thank you very much. Is there a number that we can call?
Yes. got used to that. I don't think I have to.
That's okay. We're going to remind people that you can Google Foresight DRM Disaster Mapping Hackathon to find more details about the World Earth Day Hackathon event, where students are building apps for mapping and disaster planning at the UB Open Campus. Ma'am?
You can call at 323.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
323. Okay, well, thank you very much, ma'am. We are talking about ontological whiteness, right? But I'm glad that people are excited.
I'm glad that she called and gave her pertinent information, so that's always good. But let's connect to the next caller. Producer Patrick, call her through. Go ahead, caller. Can you hear me? Hello? Caller Gernwent? Go ahead.
Guardian Radio.
Yes,
Guardian Radio, you're live.
Great. That's your brother, John Ganu II. So.
Oh, go ahead. What are you saying, man? Chris.
Hey there, man.
Blessings.
Hello to Sister Erin as well.
Yeah.
I heard this discussion going on about Cleopatra. I don't know if it was over or how.
No, man, go ahead. Go ahead.
But, so what's interesting, and it's a great discussion how y'all are talking about race too, right? What's interesting to me is how we selectively apply 21st century definitions of race to historical characters. So, for example, when we're talking about the person who is 1/8 black, who owned slaves in the Bahamas, that's black. But when we're talking about Cleopatra, who is way more than 1/8 black, you know, she's all of a sudden white or Greek, right?
Mm-hmm.
And first of all, Ptolemy, we're talking about Cleopatra the 7th. It's just the 7th one, right? And this group of people who did come from Greece came to Africa, and there's 7 generations in. So how is it that Cleopatra, by the American, and it's American scholars who defined her as not being quote-unquote black, yet they used the one-drop rule, right?
Mm-hmm.
But how is it that they in Africa for 7 generations, and of course they married into these Egyptian and Kemetic families, had children with them, but all of a sudden now their descendants are not black? So for me, it's just this grand whitewashing of history that we still continue to suffer from. And this kind of academic mafia that exists out there that continue to perpetuate white supremacy under the guise of true scholarship. So to say that Cleopatra the 7th, because that's the one we're talking about, was not a person of African descent, or at least partially, and to then selectively use blackness, of course, when it suits the white supremacist narrative, is quite troubling. But I'll just hang up and try to listen in on the comments. Thank you, man.
No, I appreciate that. I appreciate that. But, and that's something to consider. And why was there a need to have Cleopatra be a specific color, you think?
Yeah. Well, because that's what white supremacy does, right? White supremacy perpetuates the idea that white is not just the best, but it's right. It is not just the standard, but in this white supremacist system, What has happened is, right, this is why the point that the caller made, that aren't we all from the human race, right, which is what he was trying to say, aren't we all a part of the human race?
Mm-hmm.
We all a part of the human race, but it appears as if white people want to convince us that they created us. In fact, they tell us that their God created us, right? Every other ethnic grouping around the world has a God that looks like them. People in India, their gods look like them. European people, their gods look like them. Asian people, their gods look like them. Why is it that Africans, that we're trying to convince Africans that their gods look like white people? Right? It's because, in fact, and I can...
Go ahead.
Yeah. You know, it's because this is how you perpetuate white supremacy. That whiteness is not just right, that we are the entirety, we are the only good thing. You came out of us. We created you, right? Some scholars would suggest that it's the reverse.
Mm. And especially when you see the ancient DNA and bone skeleton remains would be in Africa.
We look at a well-known fossil, Cheddar Man, right?
Yeah.
Cheddar Man is a fossil found in Cheddar, Gloucester. You know, cheddar cheese? That's where cheddar cheese comes from. this boy is more bronze than I am. Mm-hmm. Cheddar man is darker than I am, more bronze than I am, with blue eyes. Mm. That's a black man. Fossil in England.
But let's talk about ontologically American.
Yeah, yeah.
And what that means, right? Because mm-hmm. we can appreciate ontologically white and have a white construct and saying that it's a culture.
Before we shift, let me just make one more point, right?
Go ahead.
The point is this, is that whiteness... and white power structures also destroys European indigenous cultures. Whiteness is not just African indigenous, right? What we say is African indigenous culture. Whiteness destroyed European indigenous culture as well. And this term witch hunt, I stopped using it because it's a slur, right? And researchers estimated anywhere from hundreds to millions of women and naturalists, herbalists, spiritual practitioners were killed, right, in an attempt to destroy indigenous knowledge and to propel white supremacy. So whiteness doesn't only destroy people of African descent, it also destroys people of European descent as well.
I guess that would explain how Turkish is not necessarily white, but they're European.
Right, and how in the U.S., well, see, watch this, in the U.S. census, right, Arabic people were told to indicate white. That's their race.
And because they came originally from Aryan. Whatever that is.
But that's what they want to... Anyway, it's deep.
But we have another telephone call here. Producer Patrick calling through. Go ahead, caller.
Mr. Nuri, didn't God say, let us make man in our image? Our-ness?
Yes.
Our.
Our. Yeah, plural. Could be more than one. Different type of people. And man could be plural. Different type of man. And you know, there's Homo erectus, Homo sapien, Homo... All kind of different
Neanderthal
type of... Yes, groupings of man or man-like. Mm-hmm. So all of that could have happened and what means us and whatever it is. And that's all conjecture and mm-hmm. what we assume. But again, ontologically American.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that a Kentucky... I'm allowed to call it here? A burger... Fast food restaurant.
Yeah.
Kentucky is a good company because maybe they do good sponsors, right?
But fast food, and Bohemians wake them.
Yes. Fast food restaurants have infiltrated and taken root as a part of who we are in the Bahamas.
Right.
Why is that? And why are we comfortable to say, hey,
and so watch this.
I need a hamburger and fries. I need a pizza.
Right. So we have a fast food culture here, right? But we only have like one or two local fast food franchises.
Mm.
In Barbados, they got Chef Ed. When you get off the plane, you say, you want some Chef Ed?
In Jamaica, they have Mothers. And Mothers is in Kentucky. Again, I call the people name. But yes.
They partner with. See, now look
at that. They sell hot patties in Kentucky.
Right. Look at that. Look at that.
And jerk.
Maybe that's a... Look at that. I want to explore that more. Maybe not now, right? Mm-hmm. But you're not challenged by them. You say, look here, we're going to share this space together.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to use you to sell me. But what franchises do we have there, considering the extent of the penetration of the fast food culture?
Mm-hmm.
Surely we should have more Bahamian fast food franchises in the country. But we don't. It's a proliferation of American franchises.
So we are technically in the Bahamas ontologically American because we have an American underlying culture that we embrace and accept. And I see we have a caller here, so let me go to the caller and come back to that.
Yeah, yeah.
Producer Patrick, caller through for me, please. Go ahead, caller. Can you hear me?
Yeah, good morning, Ms. Green. Good morning, Mr. Nuri.
Morning.
Yeah, you know, it's a very interesting topic. You know, congratulations, CA Nuri, for reminding them that Not according to me and you, but according to the DNA symposium, right, Aaron?
Uh-huh.
Done years ago, found out that, you know, the origins of man from Africa, right? The DNA symposium, unadulterated DNA. But CA Nuri, what you suggested just now was pre-ancestral chimpanzee, Homo erectus, Homo sapiens. But Homo erectus would be the first time that man started to walk upright, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So those evolutionary concepts, which, you know, Darwin is being proven wrong, but when we say Semitic, when we say Semite, that's really just a language, but in order to show how powerful the miscegenation was, right, when we look at the Hittites and the Indo-European and Afro-Asiatic tribes, right, you can see miscegenation, obviously, right, Ms. Green?
Mm-hmm.
All right, then. So I still run with CA Nui concept of everybody coming out of Africa. So why are they denying this? This is because, I'll pull it up because I learned this from Hash McQuazy more than 20-something years ago, Aaron. There's a painting during the John DeMar period, right, in which this is depicted in mosaic. This is depicted in mosaic art, in which they caught the Queen sleeping with a black man, and then this is all being depicted here. You see the white people they gather around the church people. They dress in church clothing, and so they surrounded the bed, and then the next depiction is when they grab him and burn him at the stake, and then they show you another depiction where they are purifying the Queen to get rid of the blackness. But then there's also another depiction in which there's a zygote, and there is a European pushing a knife in the zygote, destroying the black seed. And this is mosaic art. So I don't. That is self-explanatory in itself to me, along with the obfuscation of history. Bless up. I just wish I'd called before, Chris. Give thanks.
Blessings. Yeah, man. Blessings.
I see I have a text here with suggesting that the highest grossing Wendy's in the Caribbean is in the Bahamas. And the highest grossing Kentucky in the Bahamas, in the Caribbean, again, is the Bahamas. Mm-hmm. I would go as far as saying the highest grossing wine sale in the Caribbean is in the Bahamas, right? And the highest grossing bear sale, apparently, is also inside Bahamas. I believe it's because of tourism and then that the hotels order these things. Not that necessarily that we drink a lot, right? But what the premise I'm trying to say is that our culture is so American that we consume fast food more than the Caribbean. We consume the culture of bear, especially during sporting events, right? When football, we are, in contrast to the rest of the Caribbean, we are more footballers, more American football persons, where they play soccer. Because of our proximity to the United States, you see that we are more prone to basketball culture, right? We have more high schoolers here who actually believe they could make it to the NBA.
Yeah.
Despite their 5'9", 5'4".
Yeah.
And they,
Spud Webb.
They believe.
From Spud Webb hit the court, every Bahamian thought they could be in the NBA.
Yeah, they actually, because of how close to the United States.
You know, and let me say this. This can become an uncomfortable conversation for people, right? And I say, sit with the discomfort. Don't let the discomfort stop the conversation from happening, right? Because the conversation is far more important than our own individual discomfort, right? For us, it's a matter of crisis. Cultural imperialism is a real thing. And it's something that the political class, the politics, the governing administration has to deal with as well, right? You talk about how the merchant class reinforces cultural imperialism, how it reinforces ontological Americanness. Mm-hmm. What are the shops bringing in? The illusion of choice, the illusion of standard, right? The illusion of value, what's best. Is it great because you've tested it and it's a great product? Or is it great because it comes from the U.S. and everything that comes from the U.S. is great?
Then I'll a question with this. We are in the precipice or a cusp to changing our tourism product, right? Mm-hmm. Or we're trying to define ourselves to have what they call a superior product. And you see that even the cruise ship owners are saying, hey, we want you to partner with us to make the Bahamas a greater or better destination.
Mm-hmm.
But now the product that they are pushing, our government and the foreign foreign investors are saying that we need to have cafes, right? We're selling French bread. It needs to have a certain clean, pristine look.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say to you, why is our tourism product needs to be so pristine to have cafes and wine cellars and selling chocolate and having people roll in a particular cigars and et cetera, et cetera. Why is there that being pushed in contrast to having something more germane, generic in nature?
I don't know if I can answer those questions specifically, but what I can say is this: is who is devising, who's imagining, who is creating the product?
Someone's imagining what the Bahamas should look like.
Right. And whose imagination are they trying to pique? right? Whose interests are they trying to pique?
Interests are they trying to satisfy?
Right. Is it that white people are imagining what paradise must be to other white people? Right? This is white people in an office belong to a European company, and they're marketing, and they can only see white people as the users of this product, right? Mm. And they say, well, I'm white person. What would a white person want on a vacation, right? Which is not the right way to do it, because you should be coming to a country to enjoy the culture of the people. Go on.
And you see that a politician saying that part of ski needs to change. And you say, change into what? And they, again, the narrative is, this is how I see part of ski, which is more look like a Key West concept. This is how I see our key, a fish fry, which is more a Key West type concept. And you're saying, who is pushing this particular look and the planting, not of indigenous trees, but a purposely planting of palm trees to look a particular look? But I see we have a caller here, so we'll pass that caller through. Go ahead, producer, pass the caller. Go ahead, caller, can you hear me? Caller Gurn once. Caller Gurn twice, you're going. I just want to give a shout out to Rose McPhee. She came in to get her prize today.
Okay.
I remember now that I need to mention her name. She's a frequent caller. We're going on a break right now. We're going to continue to explore why does it seem as if we as Bohemians are ontologically American. And we were defining that the term white in this particular scenario is a cultural nuance, not a particular race color. And that why are we as Bohemians are ontologically white and in terms of our pursuit of who we think we are or should be. But we'll be right back. I'm interviewing and engaging Aaron Green. This is C.A. Nuri on Guiding Radio and AM. We'll be right back.
Tomorrow?
Nobody, what happening?
Joe bringing the knife to school? He could do Junior in?
For what?
Well, he fooled with Joe girl.
Mother sick. And you know Junior don't back down for nothing. So that means you got a big fight tomorrow.
So whose side you want?
Side? I trying to stay in school, not Simpson fan. You gotta tell somebody about this fight.
Tell somebody? I ain't no snitch. I mean cool, you know.
Wait, if you so cool, then you need to stay in school and stay out of the fight.
Yeah, but if I don't hang on Joe's side, him and he boys coming for me next.
All right, so we definitely gotta tell somebody. We gotta prevent the fight.
What I say, I don't want nobody call me snitch.
We could just call Crime Stoppers. You could report what you know, and nobody gotta know it's you.
So how do I work?
All you gotta do is call them, or you text them through the Crack Crime Bahamas app, and nobody can know it's you.
Then the police come looking for me for more info, and when they finish with them, Joe them coming looking for me?
When you call Crime Stoppers, the calls go directly to Miami, and they don't ask nothing about you. Then you can get the pen from them, and they can claim a reward later using that same pen.
Plus, everything's scrambled, so nobody can read what you said.
Calls 308-8477 from Nassau, or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands.
After a brief layoff, Fish Fry Fridays is back in the big carnival month. The Big Band Passage will get you in the mood for the big carnival road march in the streets of Nassau. That's right, it's the pre-carnival edition of Fish Fry Fridays, May 5th at Margaritaville, downtown Nassau. Featuring Passage, DJ AI, and special guest models from the Euphoria Madness Masquerade Band, modeling their costumes that will be on the road for carnival. Fish Fry Fridays is back, May 5th. Doors open at 6:30 p.m. $25 general admission. $55 buffet and party. Don't miss Fish Fry Friday. Back with the pre-carnival edition.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Good morning and welcome back to Guardian Radio AM with Cecil Nuri. I am his guest today, Aaron Green. I want to open the show. We got a call earlier today and it wasn't very clear. Let me clear that up. Dr. Ropo Ogundipe from Geo Intelligence Solutions is at UWE, that's University of the West Indies Open Campus, holding a hackathon. And they are creating apps for mapping and preparing for natural disasters. It's Open Campus, University of the West Indies. You can call 323-6593. That's 323-6593 for more details. It is a disaster mapping app creation hackathon. If you ain't got nothing to do this weekend with your children, try and sign them up, go down, get involved, see what's up. This is a great opportunity.
Good. I'd like to take this opportunity. I see you, Carl. I'm going to come to you shortly to read this text. It says, making something clean and pristine doesn't mean white. Be careful you don't start classing things that are black, are not clean, organized, etc. As our African ancestors were known to be very clean people.
Right. That's one of the, when you see me moving my mouth with no words coming out, that's one of the things I was trying to say.
And when I said clean, pristine, right?
Yeah.
I like fish fry when it's had to be shacks, right?
Yeah.
Because that is more, to me, was more Afrocentric. It could have been a clean shack.
Yeah.
But it's now moved to restaurants, right? Restaurants with cafes. And I said, but that's not necessarily what being bohemian.
That's not what a fish fry is. But more importantly, that's not what a fish fry is.
And they want to duplicate that at Port of Ski, which is more of a fish fry, which is more Caribbean, more bohemian in terms of where we're coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to, and for lack of a word, better word,
gentrify.
Yeah, that to make again a more ontologically American, or create a whiteness, right? And not being race. I'm talking about in terms of a cultural look,
mm-hmm,
of that. And that's what I meant by the changing it to be pristine. But there also is a conversation of industry standard. So these things, what is bohemian, falls below industry standards. That the lady who sells mangoes and pears and yams on the side of the street and by the fish fry is below industry standards. So she should be removed, because it makes our Americanness seems diminished, and that we do not want that type of salesperson as part of our tourism product or a part of our natural living. And that should be a concern when what should be indigenous, what it should be typically bohemian, has now been put on the fringes into accommodate what is ontologically American.
I think that's a good example, right? Because the problem isn't necessarily the fruit stand. The problem is the people that pull up on the sidewalk to stop at the fruit stand, right? But that's not the root of the problem. The root of the problem is that we don't accommodate that fruit stand as a part of the authentic vision. So we don't ever accommodate the cars, because we know people can come in cars.
I even top that. She was there. The lady was there before the sidewalk. She was intentionally left out,
right?
Because there's no value to what she does.
Yeah.
Right.
Or to her.
Or like we have when ladies do it on the highway, on the Harwood Highway in the corner. PLP lady.
Oh, okay. You said that, Laura.
Yeah, Miss Laura. Yeah, yeah. And her stand is part of the cultural experience of what should be the Bahamas. However, again, we did not include her into the concept of this is part of Bahamas.
Right, I say that's why they look so junky. They look so inappropriate. It's because you haven't included them in their own product.
In our quest to being ontologically American. And let's go back to the caller. Producer Pastor, call us through for me, please. Go ahead, caller. Can you hear me?
Hey, good day. How's everyone?
Good. Well. Thank you.
Yeah, I think it's a simple way to test this. Let all the Bahamian dreamers go to the American embassy, carry the Bahamian passport, and tell them they're American. Let's just see what the American they say. So let's have part two of this show. Let's see what the American can tell them. That'd be the answer. Thank you.
Now, see how you said that, caller? I really appreciate the point you made, but because I can jump up and tell you right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is a very interesting space, because I can tell you, Cool Rock, Cool Hoik, the Jamaican, went to New York. All the Americans saying, this is the boy who started hip-hop. This is the boy who started hip-hop. And I'm going to sit down and argue that, no, it can't be him alone. You can't escape the Bahamian influence on America and American music. You can't take the Joseph Spence out of R&B.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? You can't take the Tony McKay, the T Connection. The list goes on. I am remiss. You can't take these names out of the American music experience. You can't take Bert Williams out of vaudeville, right? You can't take Calvin Lockhart out of the acting. In some ways, Key West, Florida, Coconut Grove, Conkville, in some ways, boat building, the Bahamas is intrinsically a part of the American experience. So, like, I really glad you said that, caller, right? And this is why we have to have the conversation. What is culture and what is politics, right? How do they change? What is mutable? The passport is immutable, right? Like, nationality, they can tell you, like, you were born a Bahamian and you either had to be naturalized, you know, or you remain a Bahamian. But culture shifts and changes in different ways. I may not be able to go there and say that I'm a Bahamian, see my Bahamian passport, but I could say, don't you dare talk about music without acknowledging Joseph Spence and Frederick McQueen. Start at the beginning.
Since you mentioned passport, why is it so important for Bahamians to have pre-clearance? So important to say, but our passport is valued more than the rest
That's a big part of it. We may think it's cultural, it's economic and political. It's economic and political, right? It's a big part of the tourism product. Trust me, if you've ever traveled south, you ever traveled abroad, you just don't have the same ease of traveling. You can't book your tickets the same way if you don't have pre-clearance.
And that's part of us being, wanting to be American or thinking that we are American, that we are the standard, the industry standard.
Because we've never clarified it and say, look here, this is political and economic. This have nothing to do with culture. This is political and economic. People can easily... that can easily feed into this imagining of Americanness, this ontological amnesic state.
But that's what the conversation is about. It's trying to understand why we have embraced America, why we have embraced American culture, right? And put it as superior on top of us.
But that's about proximity, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not here to diss people and say, oh, you hate yourself.
Mm-hmm.
It's proximity. We have to ask ourselves, to what extent does the merchant class reinforce American culture and ontological Americanness? We got to ask ourselves, to what extent does the political class take advantage of ontological Americanness to expedite policy and political agendas, right? It's like when industry stakeholders say, why are y'all griping about these changes in standards? They're doing it in the U.S. We're not the U.S., and you haven't told me once how you are going to apply those American technical dynamics to this Bahamian environment, technical, legal, and cultural.
And before we go, whose culture seems to be heavier, the Bahamian culture, or we are heavily Americanized?
Well, listen, I could be honest with you. I don't have an answer for that. That should have been one of the biggest conversations for the 50th Independence. And I guess we still have time, Cecil.
Yes.
Maybe we can host a panel, right?
Mm-hmm.
And invite people to submit like an abstract so they could get a spot on a panel,
mm-hmm.
or even have like a little conference. This should be one of the biggest parts, because we are going to exclude young Bahamians from the Bahamian vision, because we're going to tell them they're too American without acknowledging that it's us that forced them, because this is the only thing they could become in the environment that we allowed to fester. And I can say that. Fester.
Fester. It's now 12:01.
Yeah, we got to go.
Yeah. Guiding Radio with the AM with C.A. Nuri. And again, thank you very much, Aaron, for joining me so we can just analyze this new concept.
I want to apologize to my good Uncle Stanley Mitchell because he wanted to join this conversation. Uncle Stanley.
We can bring him into the next conversation.
We can do it again.
Yes.
Yeah, man.
Have a wonderful day.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.